This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the only pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single bite-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your bite-sized pickleball podcast, where we take a single shot or strategy and tell you all about it every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in Long Beach, California, joined by my good bud, Mr. Scott Fliegelman in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Scott.
Good afternoon, Michael. Hey, listeners, I want you guys to know, Michael does that off the cuff every single time. That's not pre-recorded. He just nails it unscripted every time. You got to love it.
I appreciate that. Thank you, sir. How's Boulder pickleball today? Boulder, you're a week or two into your opening.
And we started June 1st, so we're like week three, and it's going really, really well. We've had a couple of hot days, and we're able to kind of learn how to keep things kind of cool in here, and it's rocking.
Well, that's fantastic, Matt. Congratulations. I'm going to tell you a little story, Scott. As you well know, I have been playing with a two-handed backhand since the beginning of the year. And part of what makes that great is it's a whole new set of tools that I have to play with that I didn't have before. So if I'm on the right-hand side and I get a forehand, I can sometimes, you know, flick the ball with a nice little forehand through the middle, and I have that shot in my arsenal. Well, now I can add the backhand version of that because I have this nice little tucking two-handed backhand. Well, I've gotten into the habit when I'm on the left-hand side, I get into a couple of two-handed dink rally action, and then I fire a ball at the player caddy corner for me, diagonal to me on the court, and they respond by pulverizing my teammate in the chest because they are waiting for a cross-court speed-up. And at some point, my partner was like, hey, stop speeding up cross-court because it's not working. And I didn't even know that was a thing until this. And when you suggested today's show to me, I was like, oh, I totally do that. So cross-court speed-up, Scott, let's talk about them.
Well, we could make this a morsel-sized show today and just wrap. I think you just gave us everything we need to know. Well, maybe not quite. We'll talk more, but that's the crux.
Yeah, let's talk about how to not do that. I mean, first and foremost, let's talk about speed-ups in general. You're in a rhythmic dinking rally, and then you get a ball that, you know, is maybe in the what we might call the yellow zone, which is what, like knees to waist? Is that considered yellow, Scott?
Well, I think I'm going to make a case for it's highly flexible and it's going to depend on a range of parameters, experience, and a whole bunch of other things. I kind of like to lay it out this way. I mean, you're right. We're jabbing, we're sparring, we're leveraging the non-volley zone to keep the ball low and unattackable on our opponents. Generally, we do that cross-court to go over the low part of the net into twice the real estate. You know, lots of reasons to go cross court. And we're just looking for a ball to instigate, stir the pot, cause some trouble. I like to offer a couple of guidelines for all of my students that if the ball is below X off the ground, we want to hit softly. And if the ball is above X, we can hit hard. And X gets lower with experience and skill and anticipation and flexibility in your body and balance, how well you disguise the ball. X is practically an inch off the ground for the folks who watched an MLP over this weekend. And X is higher than that for our lower rated players. So let's start with waist high, and then it gets lower and lower from there.
When I stepped on the court with you and the six other 5.0/pro people, I was shocked by how low the X was, especially for the backhands. Those ladies had a, like, you put it anywhere on the court, pretty much as high as it needed to be, and they're able to speed it up and fire a ball back that stays in the court. That's the part that shocked me, is that they were getting enough on it and enough topspin on those backhands to keep it in the court and hit me in the chest. Those two things were all true at the same time.
And that brings up, you know, the point, the title of this show is that they were not hitting those cross court. Well, let's back up one step. If the green light is there to hit hard, if we're no longer in this specific player's yellow zone and the green light is there to hit hard, where should they hit hard? I like to say if the ball is up around eye level, there's not a whole lot of conversation here. Hit the ball hard down the middle.
Right.
You know, and hit it low at the feet, you know, and there's nobody standing there in the middle. But if it's at a height at which the net tape is in the way of hitting the ball down the middle, don't go 3, 4, 5 feet off the ground down the middle, because that's somebody's big fat forehand is waiting there. And the point of this show is let's not hit it cross court. You've already let on one of the biggest reasons is that that player cross court, let's say, is standing 21 feet away from you and the player directly across from you is 14 feet. But if you lean in and get that ball out of the air, now they're only 11 feet away. So it's really just a matter of which one of those opponents has more time to anticipate and get ready for some sort of a counter. That's the very biggest reason not to attack cross court. And our opponents are getting really good at picking up on it, turning that ball that you hit pretty hard, twice the speed, back in the direction of your partner straight ahead from them.
Well, and what we talked about a few episodes ago was literally always being ready to counter. You have that drill you like to do where you've got one person as the instigator and the other person is the resetter, and you're right across from each other. And that instigator can instigate anytime they want. It's just a training to get used to your opponent instigating at any given time. And I think when we get this sort of above 4.5-ish level, they're ready. They're pretty much ready for the counter. And obviously you get better and better as you go along. But what I found in this higher level sort of 4.5 plus with my partner is that very rarely when I sped up cross court, did I catch them in any significant way. They were ready for it and they fired it right back at us.
And let's be honest, you know, hitting hard cross court feels better, is easier, especially for our tennis player friends. That makes sense to hit across your body and hit hard. And I'm seeing this problem all the way up to the upper 4.5, close to 5.0. And that's what's concerned me enough to bring that up as a possible show topic. These are really good players knocking on the door of 5.0, but they're making this mistake over and over and over again. And we need to train off of it. And there's another reason why the cross-court speed up doesn't work against a 5.0 player, because that player who's cross-court from you knows that they're only protecting a very short court due to the angle of that cross-court speed up. They're going to protect their inside shoulder. And if the ball goes to their outside shoulder, they're going to let that ball fly because it's going to go out. So I love it when I catch on that my cross-court opponent's speeding up at me. I only worry about my inside hand, my inside shoulder. I protect that. I let the other one go.
Right. Because if you're on the left side, you pretty much know your forehand's getting attacked. They're going to try to chicken wing you if they do that again, right?
Sure. But the other way around, if I'm on the right side and the player diagonal from me wants to attack my chicken wing, that's going out of bounds.
Right.
You know, there's only about 12 feet of court for that player to hit. And if I let it go, if they hit it hard and I let it go, it's got to go out of bounds. They're welcome to hit soft in my direction, low, but hard has to go long, has to go wide.
You know what's interesting about that? I just realized this. When I do it forehand, if I go cross court forehand, I'm looking for the space between the players. Sometimes you can thread the needle and put a ball into the back corner of the court and they're both kind of confused. You're sort of hitting in the middle of those two people. But when I do backhand, I usually attack body. I usually go right for the person instead of that space in between. That's apropos of nothing. I just thought of that right now, but that's interesting that I do that.
Well, the two are connected. And like I've shared on the show, I've had the pleasure through some of these split age events to play with some of the best players in the world next to me. And they don't start off splitting the middle. That's a ball that happens at 8-8 later in the game where the player directly across from them has had about enough of getting tattooed and they back up. They back up two or three or four steps. And now the space down the middle is wide open. But the space down the middle at 0-0-2 is closed at 4-0 plus. That is not a place to go. So cross court's not a great option. Down the middle's not a great option. We need to, you know, let's call it a knee-high ball. If you want to instigate, we've got to go straight ahead. And then the surprise and the proximity of our opponent is what makes it work.
All right, well then let's talk about, now that we know the issue and we are all going to work on not speeding up cross court, let's talk about how to correct it and how to recognize that you're in a good position to speed up down the line or across from you. Starting with stable base, even though we harp on it and we talk about it literally all the time, going to MLP this weekend and watching the synchronicity that, I can't remember who it was two female players, it might have been Anna Lee and Leia Jansen playing together at MLP, and watching them, the moment that their ball came off of their paddle, and how quickly, and then again, they're at the four-person ritual kitchen exchange, how quickly they split and bounced and stabilized between every single shot. I was like, man, they must be listening to this podcast because they do it all the time. And then when I got on the court, because it's always inspirational to play right while you were there or right after, I realized how much more time you have to make decisions about what shots to hit when you stabilize the base and you split step between every stroke. So when the ball is on the paddle of your opponent, your springs are loaded and you are ready to take that next shot. It is just so paramount and it's such a high level thing to master.
So it's chicken and egg. I mean, your observation there is these players are balanced, stable base, ready to react and choose the correct shot selection, which just rarely, if ever, is hard cross court. So let's start with that. Yeah, let's mirror what you saw this weekend at MLP. A lot of the time when I see cross-court speed-ups, the balance isn't there. The split step isn't there. They're leaning. Their shoulders are off axis. They should be level. They should be level laterally and on the fore aft planes, and they're not. And that just tends to lead to that cross-court speed-up. I'm pretty sure they're connected. So we've got to work hard with our footwork, starting with the split step, to move laterally, move optimally laterally so that our shoulders remain level on the lateral plane when we get ready to hit our shot. Because if they're tilted toward the outside or the inside, you know, our paddle angle changes. So the ball doesn't go where we imagine it should go. And a lot of times that just seems to end up with a cross-court ball for some reason.
Let's talk about how to strategically deploy this, as well as physically how to train this. So I'm going to start with the physical training part with this story. Back in the day, I won a championship, an autocross championship, which is a car racing championship, in my 89 Honda Civic Si. That car was like a go-kart. And the thing about it with autocross, it was so precision that when we would have a slalom, let's say there was a five-cone slalom, and you have to go back and forth through a slalom, I would step the slalom out so I would know exactly how many paces were between each cone. And I still remember, if it were 28 paces or more, I could take that slalom flat out. I just knew that. So that is something that I had when we would walk the course ahead of time. I would say, oh, cool, I can take this one flat, but that one I'm going to have to do with like a little bit of lift through the last two cones. So that was just a bit of data that I knew. I think we could do something similar with this particular drill, which is, I think we need to feed a lot of balls cross court and figure out how low we are actually able to speed a ball up without hitting it out, first of all. And two, if we were to hit it out, how accurately we could target our opponent. Because obviously, if you guys watch even a high-level pickleball point, you could probably find four or five balls during a firefight that would have gone 5 feet out. But there's just no time to react to them. So I think we need to train how low a ball can be, still be effective and surprise somebody over the net, sort of hit them in that center mass if we need to, or keep the ball in play. And I think that's just something you could drill. Probably have a partner cross court feeding you balls to the forehand and the backhand and just see how low you can go until it's like, all right, here's my threshold. And that's our X, right? That's when we get to establish what our X is to go, all right, now at least I know if a ball's below this, I'm definitely dinking it. If it's above this, I at least have the option of speeding it up.
And speeding up straight ahead, avoiding cross court, avoiding the what looks alluring opening down the middle, which isn't open. And this is a great use of Diego, you know, our occasionally referenced soccer dummy that we place on the other side of the net and put an X on their right shoulder or their left shoulder if they're left-handed. And let's figure out, you know, how high off the ground a ball needs to be to routinely hit it there. And keep another adage in mind, a foot long is a heck of a lot better than an inch low when it comes to the net. So just see if you can modulate, you know, pace and angle of attack.
There's another t-shirt in there, but I don't know if it would be approved. So you're in a match with someone and maybe you haven't really deployed this. How would you train knowing when to deploy this?
Well, I can think of two scenarios where this comes up, you know, regularly, one pro, one con. When you are attacked down the line, the natural response, if you're going to counterattack, is countering cross court. And that doesn't work out for the reasons that we talked about. So we need to begin to train, perhaps in a drill setting, that when you're attacked down the line, which is the smart play by your opponent, we need to counterattack right back at them. They're the ones who just finished hitting a shot. Their balance isn't great. They're not fully ready for the counterattack. Their partner is totally ready. So let's look for that. Right. It's one of the reasons why I attack high backhand when I'm on the right side. I'll go directly at the player across from me, high to their backhand, and they usually hit a lukewarm ball across court in my partner's direction. We've talked about that scenario before. That works out great for us, not so much for them. Had they countered directly right back at me, I probably wasn't ready to handle that counter, although I will be next time that comes up. The second scenario, which is one of my favorites, we talk about not speeding up at the opponent who's cross court from you, but I love it when I'm on the left and a ball goes down the middle between us and I'm able to get it about knee or ankle high. And I've placed my paddle somewhere around the tee of the kitchen line and the service line. And, you know, here's an opportunity to attack cross court because there ain't none. Like they're both equidistant from me at this point. So I kind of like to pick on the player who's been cross court because they're a little relaxed. They're not really expecting me to speed up at them because they're smart. They know that I shouldn't. That's the time that I'll do that. And that ends up being double effective.
Yeah, I love that. Again, this is one of those things like the split step, you guys, that I think you can work on every single time you get on the court. This is just something you can think of actively as you go into a new game. Maybe think, all right, don't speed up cross court this game. I don't know if I told you guys this, and maybe I told you, Scott, but I keep a running coaching list in my Apple Notes. So every time I play and I'm drilling, I write myself some notes on whatever I drilled on that day. And before I play the next time, I go and reread those notes and go, okay, this is a thing that I was struggling with last time. Let me just, for a few points, work on this particular thing. So I think this is one of those examples, in addition to split step, you could work on regularly because I think this will be persistent all the way up until, as you said, you've watched some very good players doing this. So I think it's something that we can all actively work on.
I think that tendency's been there for you all along, as evidenced by your autocross story. I mean, you're a student of the game and you want to be able to drive or play at your potential, and you're going to do everything you can on and off the court to go in that direction. So good for you, bad for your opponents.
Love that. Folks, you've now just listened to another episode of 4.0 to Pro. Thank you, as always, for listening. If you want to buy a carbon paddle and get 10% off of that sucker, 402p.com/CRBN. Spinshot ball machine is 402p.com/spinshot. Thank you to Oso Pickleball. And of course, Boulder Pickleball for, you know, spreading the word out there in Colorado. Go teach some pickleball there, Scott.
Back on court, ready to rock.
All right, see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.